should start by apologizing today. I'm not feeling well. I'm sure you can hear with my voice. So I'll appreciate. Okay, I'm going to request the Honorable Kwesi to come and chair on my behalf because I'm not feeling well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chairperson Mokoto, and good morning, Honorable Members, and our colleagues from the Department. As a request from Honorable Mokoto, the Acting Chair, I would request that since we are some 20 minutes late, we start with our program, and over to the department to take up the first presentation. Thank you very much. According to our program, we are dealing with the QLTC. Can you take us from? Thank you.
Chairperson, good morning to the honorable members. I'm Perry for the Chief DDG Planning Information and Assessment. I'm standing in for the Director General. The QLTC presentation will be made by the Director, Mr. Tulay Kwan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable Members. What you're submitting today is the QLTC strategic framework, which was the result of our subsequent presentation to the last portfolio committee which we attended, where we indicated that we are currently resuscitating QLTC across all levels as the concern was raised in this particular meeting. And the minister said we since met with the minister, the deputy minister, to come up with this particular strategic framework. This particular strategic framework, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we've actually tried to convert and consult widely. That is, all nine provinces are on board, all teacher unions, SGB associations, COSAS, interfaith organizations such as ACC and South African Catholic Bishop Conference, SAFE, ELRC, SALCA, the NETLEF, sister department in the main Department of Health and Department of Social Development. So within the department, it has actually gone through various CPE units, road management, senior management, triple M, HEDCOM, and this was subsequently adopted by CCEM. So we've got the framework that is now being consulted widely in Canvas and Africa. The presentation outline, I'll just quickly pull up this one. And the purpose of the particular presentation is to appraise the view the portfolio committee and even to go for the guidance moving forward. In as far as the particular strategic framework is concerned, our primary objective still remains more or less the same. We're actually saying that ETLTC, as you are aware, Honorable Members, that it was conceived and subsequently launched as a social compact between the former Department of Education stakeholders and communities. Our primary goal still remains the same.
Thank you, Mr. Nkoma. Can you just take your minute and welcome Honorable Minister. You are welcome to our meeting. We just started. We are going to be some 20 minutes late, so we request. Mr. Nkomo, if maybe the minister wants to say something, we can maybe give time to that before you come up with the presentation. Honorable Minister, your time.
I just want to apologize for being late. We were receiving the Prime Minister of United Kingdom, so it's not being able to get a permit. She reset the school in the township, so I'm very sorry for being late. That's all. Thank you.
Apologies accepted. Then, Mr. Nkomo, you can take us through. Thank you very much.
So, as we're indicating on the chair and members, that our strategy will remain the same, that of informing citizens about the importance of education and their roles and responsibilities in education towards education. That's the area that we want to focus on. Say that the stakeholders and communities should also play a critical role as far as care is concerned. Building catalysts for policy change, quality improvement and transformation. And lastly, but not least, we provide a platform for communities and broader societies actively and constructively become involved in the improvement of teaching and learning. And what we're actually also emphasizing in this particular strategy from the honorable members is to emphasize the fact that EQLTC is not a program but a campaign which is geared towards mobilizing every stakeholder to play a role in that indicated and take responsibility towards the achievement of quality education. So, very quickly, in as far as the new reposition KLTC is concerned, we're saying it is geared towards responding to the dictate of the Education Action Plan as well as the NDP. If you look at slide number 6, we're saying the strategic focus of KLTC for the next 2 years. It will be mainly on addressing two critical areas, that is social cohesion and nation building. And it is therefore important that the reposition KLTC pays special strategic attention to the following campaigns and activities to enhance the implementation of TBA programs. The first one, for the next 2 years, we'll be focusing on stakeholder engagement and community participation. Second one, the one which is always really the issue of parental involvement in education, intervention in education emergencies, quality communication initiatives and innovation, and to also be able to share and rate and interpret and build on the same level the various reports produced by the TPE, such as roundtable reports, NCC quality reports, and so on. And what we've actually done, Honorable Chairperson, is that we've actually tried to align our intervention in as far as the circular framework is concerned in line with the TBE four thematic approaches to the execution of our program. One, Q1, this is quarter one. We are mobilizing every stakeholder to be part and parcel of data analysis and also in the sharing of data analysis and results. Like we said, during quarter one, the results are out, and we are saying that as a KLTC, everyone should actually be made aware and also input in as far as the results are concerned. Quarter two is therefore focusing on measuring the impact, mainly. During that time, we are also responding to the intervention strategies that are placed either at the district or at the school level, the school improvement plan or the district improvement plan. So here towards mobilizing the communities and stakeholders to also participate in that particular process. Quarter three, we focus on the state of readiness for exams. Like for instance now, I'll be reporting on what we are currently doing as well. That's of mobilizing every stakeholder to play a pivotal role in as far as the for exams and see how best we can actually assist both the schools as well as the parents, the teachers and learners. And quarter four, we'll be focusing on measuring, on monitoring of the exams, the writing, and school readiness for the following academic year. what we actually did, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is that looking at all the PPE programs, there are many, but what we actually told ourselves is that at least let us focus on these 8 or 9 critical PPE programs where we need to mobilize society, broader society, and stakeholders to play a pivotal role. One, the issue of social cohesion and nation building in schools and communities around schools. The issue of turnaround, the underperforming schools and districts. The KLPC, we feel the broader society can play a role on that one because it can't be the responsibility of the PPE on its own. The issue of the 3-tier model testing, that we are about to implement as we need to mobilize the broader society in terms of what does it actually take and to refocus our direction in as far as only the academic is concerned, that is technical, vocational and academic. The metric second chance and Funda Lushaka Pasari programs, those are the critical programs of the department. But you usually find that on the ground, we are thin in as far as the advocate and mobilization. So, hence the QLTC is actually playing the particular role. The issue of 2018 national elections of school governing bodies, advocates and induction programs, already the SGB elections has come and gone, but still QLTC is playing a pivotal role in as far as the advocacy and capacitation of the SGBs, because at the school level, the PLTC is a subcommittee of the SGB, hence it's very important. The issue of risk to lead, which is the highlight, which is one of our critical highlights, to increase the level of literacy and numeracy in and beyond schooling environment. And the issue of athletic school, national to celebrate school sports and arts and culture, and education emergencies and the concession of quality education. I'll try to get as much as possible. And
no, don't feel intimidated. Oh. I was looking at the challenge that I was like, not you.
Oh.
Not yourself.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Chair. I don't want to be petty, but we are having a challenge here to try and concentrate while they're busy with their other work, the secretaries coming in and out. Thank you.
Thank you. I was silently trying to address to us. Thank you.
You can continue. Okay, no, sure, thank you. Currently, we just want to share some few highlights in as far as the progress and the implementation of the strategy. Because I thought the minister told us to say, should I go and pilot this particular framework and see what is it that you're actually picking up on the ground so that when we meet as a steering committee, at least we're informed. And then what we actually did in consultation with the DG and the DDG, we actually identified 7 underperforming districts across the country. That is Amatole West, Amatole East, Sesani, East OR, Tamu Kosta, Ilembe, Capricorn, and the Greater Sekukune. And what subsequently did was to assign the members of the directorate to each and every one of those particular districts to see how best we can actually mobilize communities and stakeholders to play a pivotal role in the turning around of those particular districts. The progress thus far is as follows in trying to turn around those particular districts. But we're not saying that we're excluding other provinces. KLCC work is still going on, but due to the limited capacity in the directorate, we're only 6. We certainly have spread around in as far as this particular underperforming districts are concerned. We've actually managed to convene all inclusive stakeholder meetings to familiarize them with the results of their respective metric results, both at the school and district level. And also, we've actually managed to share the respective turnaround strategies, both at the district and the school improvement plans with all stakeholders. The stakeholders have to be identified their own respective, as I indicated before, their respective roles and responsibilities they could play in turning around those underperforming or these underperforming districts. In collaboration with stakeholders, the QCC, which refers to the coordinating team that I'm talking about, was able to mobilize, monitor, and support the winter enrichment classes during the month of June and July. And it is very interesting that even the stakeholders were able to come on board. Even traditional leaders, the mayors, the councillors are able to play their respective role, which is quite, I can even name a few. Currently in the process of convening meetings, seminars, roundtable to assess the impact of the turnaround strategy on the June examination results to identify gaps, areas of weaknesses learners and teachers will have to focus on, as well from the June, July exams. And Jefferson, we were also able to create awareness of the development programs in the particular process, focusing on second chance, motorization, read to lead, care, issues of social courage, etc. And fortunately enough, the minister has actually been on board, especially in as far as the read to lead, the second chance, the care to, as well as the issue of social courage, in actually assisting us to be there on the ground. QCT will continue to monitor and support and report on the progress of the subsequent district. We are ready to start reporting to the minister on what we are picking up on the ground. Whether those particular districts, are they going to be able to turn around within the perspective of QCT or not? And also, we are currently starting the collaboration with the NSCT and the QCT in the establishment of district steering committees around the country beyond the eight that we initially adopted by NSCT, e.g. in Sekukuni, Mobali, Dr. Harris Mobati in Northwest, etc. We're even going to be spreading our influence as NSCT and PLCC in the Eastern Cape as well as in KZN. We are also currently collaborating with Eastern Cape and Limpopo in the process of setting up functional and all-inclusive functional care structures and the relationship of schools in the nearly configured. One of our highlights, which we want to share with you, with the members of the committee, was in as far as the particular program, which is emergencies and the protection of quality education. We were able to go to Northwest during the time when Northwest was actually failing. We were there on the ground. We actually spent almost a week there. And we were able to engage the stakeholders and communities, which was not easy. And especially in the Dr. S. Mumpaji district, by convening stakeholders and community meetings, whereby some schools were turned down and learners prevented from attending school during the service delivery. So we are proud to say that some, with the exception of only one area in the district, all schools were able to be normalized subsequent to our intervention. And we are made to believe that as a follow-up by the province, even that particular area has managed to be normalized. And then we have actually collaborated with other CPE units. I don't want to actually bore you on this one. And then our strategies, in as far as the mobilization and engagement strategies that we want to focus on in as far as the particular framework is concerned, is that of engage and secure diverse and strong community and organizational leadership, which will warrant us to be there on the ground at all times. Ensure authentic and productive roles and responsibilities for broader community, especially young people. Ensure authentic participation and shared decision making on the ground. Develop a shared vision with the concerned community. Jointly conduct need analysis. This is what I actually say, even to our peers. This is our fellow officials to say, as we are going on the ground, it's very important for us to always touch base. Establish and resuscitate formal, all-inclusive, functional PLCC structures at all times. Create fundraising strategies and conduct processes and outcome evaluation. So in as far as, in a nutshell, in as far as our framework is concerned, this is where we are. And this is the progress that we actually want to table before before the committee.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ogomo, for the presentation. I will now not waste much time and request the honorable members to engage with the presentation. But can I maybe request from the honorable members to in order to save time, that we let us prioritize our questions and we limit the number of our questions to at least four. You can maybe where there's a serious challenge, but let's limit up to at least four. I will not maybe allow a situation where a member will be coming with so many questions, but really it is up to us to save time. Can we show by hands those who want to engage with the presentation? Honourable members, it's up to now. I'll start with the honourable voters and honourable Machesi, honourable Mason, honourable Bosho, honourable Mukoto, and the last one was the honourable in that order. Thank you very much. Honourable Bosho.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think there must be appreciation that it's 10 years now of the equality education campaign, since I think it has been launched in October 2008. And correctly so, I think the education department indicates the centrality and the role of SGPs in terms of making sure there's what we call people's education. And probably it's important for us to get an understanding about the broad effectiveness of SGPs and whether our people's mobility and the campaign around SGPs has actually been taken to task by our people. So I think if we can be taken into confidence about the role, the function, the challenges broadly about the SGPs, I think that will help. The second issue is around the question as it relates to social cohesion. The presentation is obviously silent, and it should be contemporary, around the questions as it relates to African language as an offering in our schools. I'm raising it, Chair, that you know the only one good thing about apartheid education was compulsory introduction of Afrikaans. And the oppressor never knew that the oppressed would use it as an advantage in a post-democratic dispensation. And I think it's important that the issues of African language in all of our schools to build social cohesion is supposed to be at the pedestal of education department. I think there has been emphasis made by the minister. And when we come and get this type of a presentation, it must have a dialectical relations between what we said in previous panel speeches in terms of social cohesion and where we are today. The last issue, Chair, is about the centrality of education infrastructure. Now, it's correct that about the question about numeracy, literacy, etc., and reading it's a key tenet in the education campaign. Now, when we look at social infrastructure, in particular, it's a sister department, obviously, that is responsible, the libraries. Whether have we been able to make some sort of analysis whether the rolling out and the expansion of footprints of, you know, your library facilities in communities, has it had a positive contribution in terms of our reading, our literacy, our numeracy levels, because the slide says post school, after school, the community are supposed to work with our children to make education successful. And we know, Chair, that you know your infrastructure and libraries is central to that aspect. So if we can have an elaboration in regards to those things.
Thank you, Honorable
Chair.
Thank you. What will guide this new strategy, this
as we say, is a campaign, it's not a program. What will guide it not to step the toes of each other, these two structures, the SGP and the CHUPI, etc.? Do we have a document on because at the end, you find that QLTC is anybody's business, and that there's no control. If one feels now to call a meeting or to mobilize people against it, you will just hear there's a meeting called by the QLTC of school in such and such a park or whatever. So what guidance, as we say, is not a program, is a campaign. What under whom are they guided to execute their duties on day to day as a school? They should the principal invite them to take this or to the school? What if it, they are not invited? Who should lead them? How they fit, as it is a campaign and so on. Okay, the duration has been mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the next is the Honorable Bosho.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everybody, and welcome to the Minister. It's good to see you again. Chair, the QLTC must be measurable, and I'd like to know what targets are going to be set to measure the successes or the improvements at schools, and how special schools will benefit by the QLTC, and how they will be accommodated. And then some time ago we spoke about QLTC guidelines had to be translated into all 11 languages. Has that been done yet? And then we also spoke about a written report on evidence around whether it offered better functionality within the office of the MEC or the office of the SG. That was promised to us, if I remember correctly, in 2015. We still haven't seen it. I'd also like to know how communities are going to be mobilized to be part and parcel of this committee, and how the roles are going to be divided in, and the involvement of the parents. We also need more information on that. And then Mr. Nkomo spoke about the turning around of underperforming schools and districts. Could we be provided with the outcome of these turning around of these schools and districts? And then the Eastern Cape remains problematic, and you speak about an investigation into learner abuse cases. Can you give us or just expatiate a little more on that? Where do we stand with these cases? I know SACE is involved there, but we just need some more information. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Boshok, the next question will be coming from Honorable Mukoto.
Good morning, Minister. Firstly, maybe I should appreciate the efforts that have been done to make sure that this program works. I can see at the level of the national that there's a lot of work that is happening there, including like conceptualizing the idea and also even the program that exists. We also appreciate the fact that there are also provinces that are doing enough to make sure that this this work goes forward. But my question is, maybe if you can tell us which provinces are not doing well in ensuring that this QLTC becomes a reality. Like as some of my colleagues have already mentioned, it's always an issue that is not clearly understood by all role players, and that for me it's a government issue. I don't know what role is the SGB. I have heard you say that at that level the associations are more involved, and what role do they play at the grassroots level in schools in particular? And then the other point that I wanted to raise is the issue of accountability. Given the fact that it's not all provinces that have appointed the dedicated persons who accounts for this function, because like it's supposed to trickle down if you have a person at national, and already you have highlighted the role that you play, that you are playing a supportive role to the provinces, and you are not the actual implementer. So who is meant to implement it at the district and provincial level if they have not appointed the person? Particularly looking at the fact that the function is being located in some provinces, in the office of the MEC, has it really, you know, bore any fruit for us? The other point that I wanted to raise, maybe it will end in a proposal, how relevant is QLTC? Because for me, QLTC, even if it's a campaign, it will forever be relevant, because parents, like I'm a parent of a school going today, tomorrow I won't be, it's going to be new parents, and we have to instill the same, you know, spirit of education being a societal issue. So why, Minister, are we not making this a unit in the department? It might be a small unit, but at least you would know that you know, the work is not based at a certain time frame, because already, like, since 2008 to now is 10 years. How far is this campaign supposed to last? I think I was not there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngoni. Your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen, Minister, colleagues. You know, with this QLTC, before even it was established, you know, the schools were doing it. They were doing it. It's just now it was formalized. It was formalized. You said, I don't know whether sometimes you find that things when they are formalized, Chairperson, people run away from it. They run away from it, but it's the actual thing that they were doing before. It's just that the minister was trying to make it formal. Mm-hmm. And then we have noticed that even the business people are running away to assist the schools, more especially the township schools. I don't know how can we do that, because, you know, now I know. You know, I did not take consideration of the World Campaign and program. I thought this was the program of the department. Now I said, no, it's not a program. It's a campaign, you see. So if it's a campaign, it's everybody's job. So if it can be strengthened, that even other business sectors are talking about this issue. Because if it's a campaign, everyone must get involved financially in that. Around 2010, if I'm not mistaken, we were told, Minister, I remember that time when many people, like teachers, parents, unions, had to do a pledge. I remember I was still at school at that time, in my former life. We did pledges that this one will do that one will do that. You know, we call an assembly and call teachers, the principals, counselors, and the like. Mm-hmm. And the unions even did their own pledges. I remember because I was part of one of the powerful unions. Mm-hmm. How far is that implementation? How far is their involvement, the unions, you know, the most especially the unions, in the implementation of this QLTC, with the stakeholders involved. On the presentation, the QTC identified cases of learner abuse. I have noted that. I think when we are reading news, I think the minister did indicate in one of the responses that this year that it has been a lot of learner abuse within the schools. But she even went further and involved teachers. There's also been equally so a lot of learner of teacher abuse by the learners. You see, I don't know whether it was just a mishap not to get it in there. How far have you involved yourself to make sure that even teachers are not really abused by the learners? I've seen over the videos, a teacher running for her life, a teacher being pampered too much by learners. There are so many, and there are many unreported cases so far. That's why they are reporting to us in our constituencies. You see, then what is it that we as QTC will be doing? You, I don't know, you must tell me, because sometimes when you speak, you even forget to count. But tell me that, hey, Goni, sharp.
Well,
two, thank you very much. You spoke about the turnaround strategy. I'm happy that there are almost five provinces that are in the five. I think the one member asked, why which are those provinces? But there are four provinces that are not dealing with those issues. But you indicated that the MEC has housed those programs, that campaign in there. You see, do you have any effort to ask the four provinces, MECs, to house those things? And the last one is the turnaround strategy on the underperforming schools. You spoke about what has been a, you know, in one vet university, there was the professor Sareski, who indicated that there's a challenge that we always make. We will look at the other performing schools. We leave those who are overperforming. You only concentrate, and a trend has been those who have been underperforming will now tend to perform. Those who have been overperforming will then go down and underperform. When you look at the trend, you check, it's because now this one has been given free roll. It should, I don't know. My opinion is that it shouldn't be that case. Those who are overperforming should also be given, there should be another, this is not a strategy to make them more perform or to keep them. Do you have that strategy? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nkomo, I'm just having one point. It's just for me to know the criterion that used to appoint the QLTC officials and their incentives thereof, so that the campaign can be run smoothly. Thank you very much.
Let me just respond to the broad issues around QLTC, especially the ones around location, because it's an ongoing discussion that we have with provinces. The QLTC gets located either in the MEC's office, because in our case, it falls under a branch, but we work close with it as the ministry, because it's our responsibility to make sure that there is stability in the sector. And the QLTC remains a campaign, not a program, so that we really don't have too many structures where we can, in any situation. For instance, the QLTC Northwest is one of the best structures there. It's located in the MEC's office, and in our last discussion with the HOD, she wanted us to also make sure, like we have in the department, that the QLTC team reports to her so that she can monitor accountability and all sorts of things. So there's still an ongoing discussion. But the QLTC, from its history, it's really troubleshooting team. Everything equal, schools must be able to run with the whole aim is to protect learning and teaching. And in your normal schools, normal communities, you don't need a QLTC. If you take most of your former model schools, the school is running properly. It's only when, for instance, if a situation like Obeval, where there is a conflict between the community and the school, that the QLC team comes to see if it can facilitate and restore peace in the school. So we really would not need to have it in every locality, because where everything functions well, you don't need any intervention. It's in cases like, for instance, when you have in Vuan, where the QLTC of Limpopo had to help because there was conflict between government and the communities. And the QLTC would then mobilize the priest the way it did, the professionals, so they really look at the situation at a given time and say, what is it that can help to resolve the conflict? And that's just the history of the QLTC, to say it's always been there when things fall apart, to see if you can mobilize the key stakeholders, your parents, your communities, your educators, and all sorts of things. So it's been, and the whole idea is that it must be flexible, it must be agile, and it must be able to respond and be able to bring expertise, sometimes which are not found in education, and that's the historical trajectory. And we keep on reflecting, because the campaign, you have to keep on reflecting after you, on an ongoing basis, are you still relevant, are we making progress, and that's why you find that in some instances, especially when there's a lull, but you can see things are not going well in these underperforming districts. There are no strikes, there's no burnout schools, so there's no need to, so there's nothing which tells you go and intervene, like when people are burning streets, kids are not going to school, this is where you're going to come in and intervene. So in the reassessment, it says, let them go to those districts which are underperforming and uncover that which needs to be fixed, working with the communities and the parents to say, I'm not performing. What are the things that we can do together? So I just wanted to clarify that it is a campaign, and the idea that it has to be kept flexible. We'll tell you who's in the campaign. It's normally deployed people in sectors, because, for instance, you have representatives from the different teacher unions, which is your question, from certain other people. But half the time, they're the ones that will need to sometimes unlock. But in some instances, together with them, for instance, when we started QLTC, our biggest problem was our unions sometimes not respecting time, and that's why we had to have a pledge to say we all commit that we protect learning and teaching. So one of the problems that we have in Gauteng, where in that colored community, it was such members when people go to work. So it's to go back to them to say, we have an agreement with you, to say whatever you do will not disturb time. So I just thought I should clarify some of the things that were raised. As a result, the assessment would not be fixed, because it's not a fixed, and it should happen, where we're able to assess if we're making progress or not. Where we're able to, and we can, because it's going to be case by case, but it's already a troubleshooting team. We can say through the QLTC we're able to restore schooling in Vuan, right? And it was through the QLTC that we managed to make the breakthrough. In the Northwest, for instance, when they fight over streets, which has nothing to do with us, the QLTC team will work with people. So we can report to them, these areas we've been able to resolve the problem in the following way. But because our problems keep on changing, the challenges keep on changing, we then have to keep on assessing if we are on the right track or if we're missing other things on an ongoing basis. And that's why it's important for it to be in the embassies or even the minister's office, but accounting to officials for accountability, for management, and all sorts of things. But all the time, for instance, if I have to go to North West, I'll take the QLTC team to say, please go and work with North West. I need to be sure that kids have had the recovery program. Please make sure that we can speak to the people who are disrupting schools. Please make sure that we can do the following. So our success is going to be measured in terms of the problems that we have resolved in terms of disruption to learning and teaching, which is not an ongoing. And so, remember, Machet, it's not something that we need school by school. We just need them trouble by trouble and say, in these areas we've been able to resolve. But as I say, the other schools and the regions, the districts that we have picked up, is to say, there's a silent problem. No one is dying. but things are not working. So going to that area and see what interventions we need to do to be able to unlock what the difficulties are. But at the end of the day, you don't want it as a big structure. You really want to keep it flexible, agile, but still manage to get accountability, to be able to get people managed properly, but still be able to have the agility which you don't have in the department, where you can wake up in the morning to say, I'm told there's a street, the street boycott in Mpumalanga, go and find out who are the key players and what can we do. Then we're able to go to the premier to say, premier, these are political battles in Mpumalanga. Can you find a way of really going to assist us, because we can't resolve the problem. So, Chair, I didn't want to answer most of the questions, because I think the question I'm raising about special education is one of the things which have to go under the radar, to say there are ongoing problems in special schools. Let's have a dedicated program to then systematically deal with those problems and report progress on an ongoing basis. And that's how the QLTC works, to identify a problem, set up a program, and address it and report on it, so that it's not a program for everybody at all times, it's just addressing a specific problem at a specific time. So I really appreciate the fact that I think we should, because there are ongoing problems that we're dealing with in your special schools, but we don't have a dedicated, we deal with them within the broad program. Whereas if we can ask QLTC, PEDI to really have a dedicated team to say, these are the things that we picked up around, which we all know, and therefore these are the strategies we're going to use to resolve it. I mean, something that I don't think we have. The other issue up is that province by province have got different problems, right? And that's the other thing about the QLTC, that you will have your northwest ones, which are they respond different. Gauteng, for instance, the social cohesion issue, the language issues become quite sharp, and that's how on an ongoing basis we are in meetings with the Gauteng, with your SGB for Africans and OFU. So I meet them regularly to say, how do we deal with social cohesion and language issues in Gauteng in a way that does not disrupt? Even the Overbad works very close with the Gauteng department to say, let's not have language really rupturing the good work that we're doing in the different language groups, and how do we manage the language fallout that we're getting in the province. So we find that every province has got its own unique problems, and every sector has its own unique problems. You get to Western Cape, one of the biggest problems is around, and how they have been, it's around gangsters and crime, and something which is now spreading to other provinces. Because in KZN also begin to experience high rise of crime issue. Then to work with QLTC to say, we need to get correctional service to help us deal with this problem, because it's beyond our control. So that's what I should just say. It's a campaign, so it's an amoeba. It changes shape according to the needs at a given time on an ongoing basis.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, for the responses. Can I maybe, Honourable Mchese, request that let us allow Mr. Nkomo to also respond to all the questions. Then we'll give with the team to deal with all the questions. Then thereafter, I will afford all members to come with follow-up questions, because we cannot close on that. Maybe what you want to raise now might be, but even if it's related to the minister, yes, you will be afforded time to Mr. Nkomo and whoever.
Mr. Nkomo comes. The other one about that came from Mr. Mugin about business. I don't think it's accurate to say businesses run away from schools. Actually, South African businesses come very strongly, much more organized this time in terms of supporting us. just last week, we had a breakfast with the president to fundraise for your pizza twins program. We're able to raise from South African business more than 100 million in one morning. And most of them are still coming. So there is a response. Perhaps it's different that they are no longer doing, they are smaller than one by one. There's NCT, for instance, through which they are crowding their support as South African business to agree with us which are the areas for intervention and intervening in a very organized form. So I thought I should just clarify that I think business possibly can do more, but it's really more structured and very organized as compared to when I started being minister. And the response is very effective the way they are responding now.
Thank you. Then you can come in. I don't know who started to.
Honourable members for the questions and the responses by the minister, which I think mainly cover the areas which one also wanted to respond to. But just touching on some, because I see that there are a lot of maybe the other problem, the only commitment which one can actually do is that if one is unable to touch on some, we can actually have some kind of a follow up and kind of a submission to the secretariat to try and tighten up, should we be able to miss that. One area which I also want to focus on is that the CM, which was presided over by the minister, which actually adopted this particular strategic framework, all provinces were actually in attendance, and all provinces committed themselves to rolling out or implementing this particular strategic framework. I think that should actually be noted. And secondly, the it was also emphasized that especially at the school level, QLTC still needs to be the subcommittee of the SGP. As you are rightly saying, most members, is that if the SGP is non-functional, obviously QLTC will not actually find space to actually operate and so forth. So in as far as contradictions and the conflicts are concerned, hence this particular framework is very clear to say that the role of the SGP is to ensure that there is a QLTC where all stakeholders, where all critical stakeholders within the particular locality or whatever are on board in as far as the protection of quality education in those particular schools. Hence, of late, in this particular underperforming district, what we have actually witnessed is that to work with and through councillors and mayors, it has actually helped us a lot, especially also traditional leaders. I'm sorry to omit this particular thing. It has actually helped us a lot because those particular structures are able, or those particular are able to coordinate some kind of a centrality in as far as the community involvement and stakeholder mobilization is actually concerned. I think on the issue of not just the minister actually touched it, but safe to say that as a team working at international level, as minister has already indicated, our role is to actually go to the particular locality, then move back. We understand that the particular province definitely will actually ensure that there is sustainability when we've actually gone out and so forth. But I've actually noted what they've actually said, and the DG, interestingly, has also said that he's commending our intervention, especially in the particular district. But having gone out, it seems as if there is a lag or whatever. Maybe we need to go back to the province and the district to check how we can actually sustain the particular momentum which we were able to galvanize at the particular point in time. On the issue of learner abuse, as we are actually moving out, especially in this particular underperforming district, especially in the Eastern Cape, it was very interesting, honorable members, that it was some teachers who came to us, anonymously so, to say, please, as we are around in this particular district, there are one or two schools where there is this particular learner abuse. And then what we did subsequently was to, because I was called when I was in the office, I quickly communicated with the SAIS. And I must commend the SAIS. Unfortunately, we received the particular information when we were still in the period of exams during June and July. We've actually indicated, and they've actually come back to me, the CEO of SAIS, to say that the investigation is there, it's ongoing, everyone is actually cooperating, and we are closely monitoring the particular aspect. But unfortunately, we couldn't disclose the names, we just indicated that this particular school, this is what is happening. But the collaboration between ourselves and the SAIS it's quite nice in as far as the principal aspect is concerned, and we are maybe at some point relations be guided by the minister in terms of how do we need to communicate the outcome of this particular investigation that is currently ongoing as far as the state is concerned. The guidelines being translated, I'm happy to indicate that, we did translate the guidelines into all level languages, and we communicated those particular guidelines to all the provinces, all the districts. The DG was able to give us close to about 1.78 for translation and distribution and so forth of those particular guidelines. So we can actually say, and that's what I told otherwise, that all provinces, all districts across the country, they were actually given these particular guidelines for distribution to all the stakeholders and communities in the service.
Okay,
let
me just thank you, Honorable Chair. Covered, and the Honorable Members may remind us if we have not taken up. The Honorable Bottas was referring to social cohesion and the issue of African languages. I think we've introduced the introduction of African languages into the where an African language doesn't exist in the existing schools, and the CM has reconfirmed that, and that starts from the lower grades going up. I mean, it's an attempt to ensure that we have all our learners basically learning that if you're doing English and Afrikaans, you do that in African language as well. And you referred to the issue regarding libraries and our sister departments. There has been cooperation in this respect where, through the budget of the Department of Arts and Cultures, where they've built on school properties on the edge, libraries, which basically is for the use of the school, and then thereafter, when the school is closed, basically it's a community library as well. So there's been that. Probably we've not, in terms of their budget and maybe the number of libraries that are required, maybe there would be a need for expansion. But where it's been done, we've seen that this cooperation has ensured that the school community benefits as well as the community in general. And in looking at improving reading, ministers refer to the involvement of the Read to Learn, but the department's also involved in terms of what we call an early grade reading program, a project that has started off in the Northwest and has been expanded with some donor funding to some other provinces. When we come back to the community, we'll be dealing with curriculum specific issues. The colleagues then would give further details, including the introduction of African languages. I think the minister did indicate that it's a program, so it's not a the budget for QLCC doesn't come out of the as a vault itself or in a direct line, but in this current and the past year, we've seen a bit more funding. I'm talking about the TV itself that has been given towards the colleagues that are involved in QLTC. And the Honorable Basan spoke about the program ending in 2 years. That's, I think the presentation was referring to that in the next 2 years, the prioritization of the activities to look at nation building and social cohesion. Not necessarily that in 2 years, but that we will get direction in terms of the new MTSF or so forth. But for now, there's no indication that in 2 years' time that the program would end. And obviously, the next administration would give further direction on its continuation or modification. And I think I've covered the remaining questions. Yes.
Thank you very much, DDE, for the responses. Then I will afford the honorable members who would like to make follow-up questions. There was Honorable Machesi. Is there any other member who would want to come with a follow-up question? No, thank you very much. Honorable Machesi. The minister is on you.
Thank you. thank you, Minister. Now that you've explained the responsibility of the QRC, I have a situation in Harit. I know it's one of your districts that you're very proud of because of the performance of the learners. Mm-hmm. But three schools in Jonasfontein have experienced a situation whereby there is no water. There hasn't been water in Jonasfontein since 2012. But now the community, what they've done, I think the beginning of the term, the previous term, they took it upon themselves to say, you know, for the government to listen to our plea of water, because there's the issue between the service provider, which is Bloomwater, and the community and the municipality that was not paying the service provider for water, decided that they are going to prevent the learners from going to school. So these learners haven't been to school, I think, since May. But what the intervention that the MEC has done was that I decided to take the grade 12 to the nearest town so that, you know, learning continues with the people for grade 12. But now what is happening is that the other levels of grades, they are not receiving any education. They are literally sitting at home and it's been months. And I mentioned this to the DG, and I haven't had really a substantial response, because what we did, we went there, I had a public meeting with the community, urging them to allow the learners to go back to school on condition, they said, that they receive water, you know, potable water in the morning. They already have JoJo tanks within the school premises, and they need potable toilets, so that, you know, at least they can, whilst, you know, this situation is being resolved, at least learning is continuing in that area. So I just want to find out if you can actually intervene and if you are aware of the situation. The other issue that I asked you about the QLTC is the costing. I didn't hear you responding to that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chief. I wanted to comment that thank you very much for adding another question, but as I said, the minister is all yours. She will respond to that. Thank you very much. Honorable Minister, I'll speak for you.
No, thank you, Chair. We will definitely, when we get this place, to check what is happening there. I was in the Free State 2 weeks back on your second chance program. And we had meant to go, and I had requested that I want to go to a rural province. Then we ended up in Velco, I think. And I was told that we couldn't use the area around Jagasfontein because the infrastructure was not suitable for them. And the MEC was there. And it was put in the sense with just like broken windows and other things. I said to MEC, to be honest, I said to MEC, please go and intervene if we really can't go to a place because the place is not habitable for us. So what more about people who are there? And he agreed that he would go there. And fortunately, people from Jagasfontein came themselves at the meeting. They came to face me to say, we were told that we are coming. We now see we are in Kronstadt and we have issues. But to be honest, they never told me that kids are not going to school. They complained bitterly about the infrastructure, that the sanitation is not working, windows are broken, the hall we're going to use, and all sorts of things. And because the MEC was there, he made a commitment that he would go to check on this infrastructure story. They did, as I say, the people, the parents who came, they didn't give me the full details as to the seriousness that you are saying. So what we'll do from here, because the MEC is away. Those women came from Jagasfontein in Kumbis to say we have a problem, but they didn't say that kids were kept out of school. And I was there about 2 weeks back. Isn't it right?
Yeah.
When we went to Velco.
It was about 2 weeks.
And they came in their numbers. But you know that person to say only the five of you come and speak to the minister because it's not a meeting around complaints. But what I can commit, Chair, which will definitely keep when we give you a tour. And I also want the MEC to say, what is the report about those areas where women came to tell us about and give all the information? Around costing, businesses are saying, provinces sometimes are very unhappy with the QLTs. It was really meant to be an agreement between ourselves, the department, the parents, the teachers, and the learners on how on and when we are to sign. On an ongoing basis, we will cooperate with each other to protect learning and teaching. And that's why there was just no budget, no line. Attempt, official unions had to second people to us to work with us. But it's quite clear what has been, I think that's what the TTG is explaining, that we need money to move around, we need to don't do things. For instance, if I have to send the team to the content, they might even not only go there to facilitate that the Free State does something, but also come and find the depth of the problem, hold meetings, speak to people there. So there's this budget that we require without necessarily doing the work ourselves, because the idea is that we don't want parallel structures. So if we have a problem, we have to go to Northwest to Free State, meet the MEC, get their commitment, follow up on them without us doing the work, because they are supposed to have the budget for maintenance. And the MEC did say to me that they will respond, but yeah. So we will definitely, within a week, just, I'll take your contact. When I leave, I'm going to call the MEC. And then he must report to me how far they've gone. In the meantime, the team will go to that area and then come back to yourself and say, this is what has happened in terms of now the other problems. If children are not going to school, which is much more serious. And that's what the QLC is all about, just to protect learning and teaching when there are difficulties.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and the DBE for the responses. We'll now go to the second item, which is NSC, NSF donation. And I'll request also the presenter to mind time. My plan is that the presentation and discussions should take us 1 hour, so that the other 30 minutes will be able to begin with the way with a pair of minutes to begin with. Thank you very much. Dr. Pallin.
Honorable Minister, Acting Chairperson, and Honorable Members, thank you once again for this special privilege to present a report on national examinations. I think the committee is always anxious when it's an exam report, because an exam report is in fact an indicator of how the system is performing as a whole. And I promise Honorable Chairperson that I'm going to be short, and this is a summary report. My intention is to provide the consolidated report. That's the outline of the presentation, and the purpose is to present the consolidated report. And I think what I want to emphasize is that we did present to the committee a report on the 2017 November NSC examination results. But we have a second sitting of the November examination, if you want to refer to it in that manner, and that is the NSC supplementary exam. And therefore, Honorable Chairperson, it's appropriate that if one wants to look at the performance of the class of 2017, one needs to look at the consolidated result of both the November 2017 together with the second sitting in the supplementary examination. The supplementary exam was written in February, March, and I think what is important, just to remind honorable members, that the supplementary exam allows for learners who did not meet the NSC requirements by between one and three subjects a second time. So it's really allowing your borderline candidates. The supplementary exams are conducted in accordance with the same standards as the November examination. In fact, we set the question papers at the same time. The question papers are moderated by Umalusi. We make sure that in our administration we follow the same prescripts of the November examination, so that the supplementary is not looked at as an easy option. The supplementary examination are also subjected to Umalusi and Umalusi's quality assurance measures, and they are finally approved by Umalusi as well. The only disruption to the examination, the supplementary exams, were the protest actions, which resulted in about 40 candidates not being able to write the exam in one or two papers. Now, whenever there's a protest action, and if we are aware in advance, we're able to relocate learners to another venue. But in the odd case, I don't think we are sometimes successful, and therefore we'll have to deal with this through alternative measures. This gives you a sense of the size and the scope of the exam, and I will talk a little further about the fact that there is this difference between the number that actually enroll and the number that get to write the examination. The supplementary exam was administered across 6,341 centers, so it is a large examination. Now, this is the slide that gives us an indication of the number that enrolled, the number that wrote. Enrolled would be the number that registered to write the supplementary examination. Now, if one looks at the last three columns on this slide, 93,000 registered to write the supplementary exam, but only 52,000 finally write the exam, and 41,000 no-shows. Now, if you look at this in comparison to 2017 supplementary examination, we had 124,000 registering, 76,000 pitched, 47,000 did not pitch. So we see the numbers increasing, and percentage-wise, the no-show has increased from 38% to 44%. And the last column gives you an indication of the percentage of no-shows, which is as high as 60% in some provinces. And there are various reasons why learners do not pitch to write the supplementary exam. And I think we have discussed the supplementary exam with the committee, and that's the reason we are now merging the supplementary exam with the June exam, given this factor of no-show and learners not having adequate time to prepare for the supplementary exam. And obviously, if these are learners that have failed the exam, they certainly need far more additional support than the 6 weeks that is afforded to them between the release of the results by the minister and the first examination, which is written on the around the middle of February. This possibly is the most important slide in my presentation, Honorable Chairperson. It gives you the combined result. This, in a sense, is the performance of the class of 2017, where the overall pass percentage is 76.3%, an increase from the 75.1% that we reported, or that Minister reported, on the 1st of January 2018. And if one looks at the last column, Honorable Chairperson, you find that there's been an increase in all provinces, if one compares the 2017 on its own, and now when one looks at the combined, except for the Free State, not Free State, but the Eastern Cape, which had a very small drop of 0.1%, and I'll explain that drop. This is just the graphic representation of the improvement when looking at the 2017 compared to the combined, and the 75.1 taking us to 76.3 nationally. Now, why did Eastern Cape show that very small drop of 0.1, but obviously it stands out, and therefore it needs an explanation. I think what needs to be explained is that when we talk about the combined results, the combined results is not just adding on the supplementary. The combined results add all results that have been brought in post our minister's release on the 5th of January. So there will be remarks, there will be rechecks, there is a lot of mop-up, and pardon the use of the word mop-up, but the mop-up really refers to candidate who for some reason or the other could not be resulted prior to the 5th of January because of an outstanding SBA mark or a missing mark, and all of that is put together. We add in the supplementary, and that gives us the final percentage. Now, if one looks at the figures in the case of the Eastern Cape, you'll find that there's been a significant increase in terms of the numbers that we had writing in November, and the number that we now take into consideration when putting in the supplementary, there's been an increase of about almost 2,500. So there were 2,500 more candidates brought in, 2,544 candidates that were brought in the case of the Eastern Cape, while in the case of the other provinces, it was less than 1,000. So in the case of the Eastern Cape, the 2,544 additional candidates were brought in with the supplementary, the mop-up, the RIMA, where we two candidates. So the 2,544 is very poor, and as a result, they bring down the overall consolidated pass percentage, and therefore only in the case of the Eastern Cape, there is a drop of 0.1%. But in terms of numbers, the numbers in the Eastern Cape have increased, but in terms of percentage, that has dropped by 0.1%. This slide, Chairperson, compares the same point last year, in terms of the consolidated report last year in March, April, with the same point this year. So it's good to compare apples with apples. So in other words, when we consolidated the November 2016 and the March 2017 last year, where were we and where are we now when we look at the consolidated November 2017 and March 2018? And here you will see it was 74.5 in terms of the combined last year, and now we are at 76.3. So overall, again, we've increased by 1.8. But obviously, we still see the drops in the individual provinces, which is similar to the drops that we had in November. And I think Minister explained this as well in her release in January, that the two provinces that did, or three provinces that showed an improvement, were Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And these provinces, in fact, are our weaker provinces, and that's a significant fact that these provinces have improved. And then just to look at the gender performance on the consolidated report, we're getting the same kind of picture that we've presented to honourable members previously, that in terms of numbers, our girls are presenting higher numbers. For example, if you look at the consolidated report, 223,000 girl learners attained an NSC overall, compared to the 188,000 boy learners. But however, in terms of percentage, the boy learners are higher, 78.3 in terms of boy learners versus 74.6 in terms of the girl learners. And that trend, interestingly, is observed across all provinces, which one can observe in the last column. And this is just representing graphically the performance between boys and girls in each province, and one sees the same kind of national phenomenon replicating itself in the other, in the provinces. And this, Chairperson, is looking at the different categories of passes, achieved bachelor's, diploma and certificate, and we're looking at the combined versus the November, and in all categories there's been an improvement, and our final figure looks at 411,000 learners that now attained the NSC in 2017 combined with the March 2018. This is representing the same table graphically, and one sees the improvement there. This looks at our subject performance, Chairperson, and we're seeing the same trends that we observed in November. Our concern is with subjects like accounting, agricultural science, business studies, where there are drops. But I think the positive note is the improvement in areas where we've intervened. In the case of the sciences, in the case of math, there is improvement. And I know that some may regard the improvement as small, but I think in a system as large as ours, a small improvement is simply a confirmation that we're moving the system in the right direction. And I think in terms of the math, the fact that the numbers are also improving in math simply means that the system is shifting with more learners taking maths compared to maths literacy. Now remember, we still have a higher number of learners taking maths literacy overall, but the fact that the numbers in maths are increasing the number of mass literacy is dropping simply means the system is shifting in the right direction, and we are focusing particularly on our subjects like business studies and accounting where there are drops. And looking at performance in terms of our poverty indicators, this is something we always keep a very close eye on, and in terms of the consolidated picture, we also see that our quintile 1 and quintile 2 schools are still doing extremely well. And I always hone in on the one figure on the top right-hand corner, that 629 schools coming from quintile 1 scored above 80% over. And for me, that is an achievement. And if one looks at the chairperson in terms of the quintile 1, 2, and 3, you have almost 1,700 schools from quintiles 1, 2, and 3 that are scoring above 80%. So that, again, is confirmation that the system is certainly moving in the right direction. And then my penultimate slide is just to give you a summary of the gains that we observe coming from this consolidated report, is that we have 10,000 more learners attaining an NSE. That itself is an achievement. 6,359 more candidates attaining a higher certificate. 2,369 more learners now qualified for admission to diploma studies. And 1,370 learners qualified for admission to the bachelor program. So that, Chairperson, in summary, is a report which has been presented to the honourable members for your consideration and discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And in that order, I will request engagement from the honourable members. You will show by raising hands. The Honourable Bassoni, Honourable Machesi, Honourable Boshoff, Honourable Bota, Honourable Mokoto, and thank you very much. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and just please grab him because he has made you too sick for me. I'm just looking at the percentage of people. I thought that you would give us voice and feelings and one of which it is a wonderful thing to see that you get the end, they perform the water voice. What can we do in order to rectify that? Because we as men, we are the majority. So everything we must perform another. That be me. Thank you. I commend the point that the department has taken to give the only two examination cities for the year, because the no-show is a waste of money. The no-show shows that really we were not fair for the learner who is writing supplementary letters on time of the time allocated for revision of the course. Because if the learner failed in December, in November, how can we pass in January, February, supplementary letters? I comment. But my problem is that we have these PIPs, DIPs, or SIPs that we drew up when the year begins or when the year starts for improvement plans that we have. But at the end, you find that they don't yield results report gives us a good result. What plans do we have, or what plans do we have in place that we can also have not the improvement plans only for learners to pass, also for teachers to perform, for teachers to be able to support the educators? Because you will find that a district has the same schools are being the schools are being supported equally, but at the end you find that within that same district, with capable district officials that are supporting, there are schools that are really not performing year in, year out. And we, at the end, we say, let's sit and draw up the district plans, the district improvement plans, or the school improvement presentations are good, but the implementation, that is now going back to Kuala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'm just going to go back to the observation that you made in Northwest, whereby we had a couple of schools in the same area with the same kind of challenges. I think they were all quintile 4 schools. One was performing very well, and the other one was just struggling under the same, she's thinking about, the same leadership, district leadership. But then you find that, there are schools that are really, really not the same, under same circumstances, same socioeconomic challenges, but then you find that, the performance of the school lacks. What do you do with such schools? Do we really look at the management and ensure that, because now we are talking about apples, so we are comparing apples to apples, and what measures do we take to ensure that those schools, they perform and they are able to produce good results? And also the other issue that was brought in was the issue of teachers going for training, the ICT training, so that they can, come back and teach the classroom. We've been to different provinces whereby the teachers will say, I went to a training, a 3-day training. And these trainings, they start, Minister, from 10 o'clock, finish at 1 o'clock, and it goes on for 3 days, and then they come back, and they become a trainer. Some of the teachers, they've never really utilized the computer before. They have no idea how to even start. And then all of a sudden, after 3 days, they're supposed to be equipped and to be able to pass the information that they've received when they went for training to other teachers. That is not sustainable. There is no way that the teachers can actually be able to perform under those circumstances. So what is it that you are doing to ensure that those teachers, they are empowered? Because that's how we are moving as a department, to the 4th industrial revolution, but we're not capacitating our teachers, we're not providing all the resources. And also, as you look here as well, when we're in Northwest again, the MEC said, I don't believe that he doesn't believe that he's number 3 or number 4 when it comes to a performance of matric, because he believes that he's number 2 after 50. Because there are two different challenges that he faces, provinces, that he cannot be compared to the Western Cape and Gauteng. So they need to be looked at differently, because they are having challenges that are different compared to all the other provinces. So there's also that issue that they feel like they shouldn't be measured according to their affluent provinces. So I just want to find out, what are we doing about that as well? It is true, we are expecting them to perform just as much as the other affluent provinces, but yet they don't have the resources, the capacity to be able to perform. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Botas.
Okay.
Honorable voters. And then honorable voters after.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. In the students that were the in the table, there is differences of those that wrote and did not write. My rough figures for 2017 and 2018 says it's just below 90,000. And I see the leadership are reporting that 93,000 enrolled this year. Is the explanation, is it from outer years, more than 3 years back, and I'm here on page 2, Chair, of the document that I have. It says nationally there was a difference in 2017 of just over 47,000, and in 2018 there was a difference of just over 41,000. But the number enrolled for the supplementary exam, somewhere it indicated it's 93,000. I think it should be encouraging, but is there a reason that it means that even your matric that is not right probably in the outer years, in 2016, 2015 actually have decided to enroll this year? I think there must just be a clarification around that issue. The last issue from the second chance program, which the supplementary exam speaks to, is page 2 says quite correctly that KZN is the highest number of candidates, Minister, enrolled. Now, it should be encouraging, but I think there's a bit of a worry from me that, you know, in 2017, last year, the SA released the midterm population estimate. It says Gauteng actually accounts for 25.3% of overall population in South Africa, just roughly over 14 million. Now, logic says the most number of matriculants should be actually from Gauteng. Has research been conducted by the Department of Basic Education to understand, could it be probably from my side, the issues of a class question that some of the matriculants actually is in private schools, the majority of them, or what is the reason thereof, Chair, that Gauteng falls actually under Eastern Cape and Limpopo and KZN, but the overall population in Gauteng outnumbers, you know, all those provinces, and but your matriculants that rise is less. I think it should be a question the administrators and the political leaders, we should actually have answers to. I think I'm just intrigued because of the bullet point that the presentation raised, that KZN leads. It's good and well, but KZN doesn't lead the population estimates from state SA. Is there a reason for that? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not going to repeat the questions that have already been asked, but what I would like to know is that these underperforming schools, could it be ascribed to the fact that many teachers are absent from schools? Because being in the Northwest just recently, 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, many of the SGBs and the principals complained to us that they are struggling to maintain teachers in the classes. Teachers just don't pitch. So we need to find out what system is in place to hold teachers to account for the underperformance. And then previously we've asked for a report, and I haven't seen it yet, on the percentage of learners that are discouraged to write a matric because during the year and the previous year they didn't perform very well, and it could bring down the pass rate of that specific school. And then if I could ask, In 2015, how many grade 10s were there in comparison to those that wrote in 2017? We need a report of those that dropped out or remained stuck in either grade 10 and 11. And then we also need a report on the percentage of progress learners. And then again, year in and year out, people are tired of hearing about it, but I have a compassion for our special need learners. We've asked for a separate report, and we were promised that we would get it on how they are performing. Our deaf and our blind learners are not cognitively disabled, and we need to see how they are performing. So again, I'm asking, could we see the separate report that's been promised to us? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bosho. Goto.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Puglia, for the presentation. just to reflect on the report presented, I think we are happy that there is progress in terms of work being done. But my greatest concern is the issue of quality of passes. Like, we do appreciate the fact that in all, you know, levels, there has been an improvement. Even the different provinces, they have maintained that. But the question that arises for me is on the quality of passes. Maybe the department can reflect on that. Because it's also a question that we raised during the oversight meetings that we had in the previous week. Of course, we'll be happy that it's called 100%. But if within that 100% you get under performance, like in terms of the number of bachelors and the subjects that we want that are critical subjects, I think for me it's a problem. And maybe as a comment, the issue of shortage of teachers, minister, the specialist teachers remains a problem. I think some time ago the department reported that they are trying by all means that at least in each school there are specialist teachers. If not, the subject advisors are available to respond whether they need. But we find that schools do not have specialist teachers and the subject advisors. For instance, in the Northwest, they are lagging behind in terms of the employment of those skilled professionals. So most of the schools, not only in the Northwest, they rely on foreign teachers. Because, like, you look at the subject performance, math is 50-something%. And at least other subjects there are. And you look at this other subject, the science subject, like even accounting, you look at agricultural science, you look at accounting and life sciences, they don't have, in some areas, even schools like agricultural school, like an agricultural school in the Northwest, I think did not even have teachers for agricultural science. They have added life sciences as part of the options, but there are no people to teach there. So maybe if you can comment on that one. And then the other question maybe that I wanted to raise with regard to the issue of second chance. I remember we received a report And also as a committee, we query to the fact that the second chance centers, they are based in certain areas which might be very far from where the learners are. I know in the Northwest, the two areas that were targeted, it was Bojanala and Dr. KK. But you know, the learners are all over. So if you wanted to interact with the support that is given there, it means that you must travel 2 hours. But we appreciate the fact that there are some of the teacher centers that are taking the initiative to make sure that they give tuition to the second chance learners. So I just wanted to check with the department if they have reconfigured the centers to make sure that they are accessible, because I think like some of the excuses that are being given for failure rate is that there are progress learners, and those learners, you know, they are weak and they make our results poor. Chairperson, the last question, no, the second one, is on the issue of, I was looking at the results, Minister, and looking at the November results, and then you see there is Gauteng, Free State, Northwest, Western Cape at the top. You know, there is another thing to me that alignment, like, in terms of performance. The provinces that have performed more in November, they seem to have dropped, like they are not maintaining, like I think it might be a general, because I did not have enough time to analyze that. There was, like, I'm giving an example, if Northwest got about 80%, 82% in November, and then after the supplement, during the supplementary exam, if they became number 2, they don't maintain position 2 in the supplementary exam, they go to another number, another position. And if Gauteng was number 1, Gauteng does not remain number 1 even in the supplementary. So I just wanted to get an understanding on that contradiction, particularly why is there that type of, or maybe they are not giving enough priority to the supplementary exam or what, but it's a question that is arising that I'm even prepared to do a follow up maybe outside. So the last question, Chairperson, is on the issue of the no-shows of enrolled learners. I wanted to check why, like, if you say that you are going to match this, do you think that we will really overcome that problem, or there is something else that we can, you know, bring forward to make sure that learners do not really stay away? Just to get better understanding. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I have just one question. Dr. Paglio, in your presentation, you reported that there is a drop in accounting, business studies, and agriculture. I just become worried with this subject, because they are very key in the economy of our country, South Africa. Don't you think it is very serious? What is it that maybe as department you plan to do to ensure that this drop is minimized, since I indicated that I regard them as key in the economy of our country? And that was my last question. And the other issue is, to honorable members, it is just good that, yes, I'll allow
follow up before, you know, even the respondent. But it is not fair if we agree with regard to asking questions. I think it is important and a good advice to you that let us write our questions. I indicated, I advise that let us prioritize questions. I know there were so many questions, but when the other members have just finished asking questions, then you know there happens to be a follow-up before even they have responded. It just becomes serious with me, but let me not close you today. Maybe when you next time you request me to chair the meeting, you note that really I'm really serious about time and everything. Honorable Machesi, you have asked the three questions. I do count. So you are left with one question. Thank you very much. You can just come with your question, then they will give the department to respond to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. But remember, it's not very often that you will have the presence of Minister Martin. So it doesn't happen very often. So take advantage of it. I just want to basically find out, you know, the reason why I just came in is because I'm just reminded by the honorable member about the two technical schools that we went to. It was one technical school and the other one was an agricultural school. And what we observed in both those schools was the fact that there were no resources. As a matter of fact, the agricultural school, when we went to it, they literally didn't have nothing, no livestock. It was just an agricultural school by name. And it's very frustrating for parents to say, you know, I'm going to take my child to an agricultural school and there's no resources to afford that learner with what they expect. And as a matter of fact, those learners, they even pay from their own pocket, you know, for tuition, but they are not receiving the education that they expect from agricultural schools. No, they were not resourced. You know, they don't, you're talking about the budget that is not adequate. They don't have proper teachers, as the honorable member mentioned. And also went to a technical school, whereby they didn't even have the proper desk. You know, they one of their subjects is drawing. I remember, I think now it's different. It's technical drawing, that's what it used to be called. But they don't even have the proper desk. They don't even have the subject advisors of those subjects. But yes, that is also another technical school that is not well resourced. So I think that is very concerning. And it would be great to basically have an idea of all the technical schools and agricultural schools to see how are they performing and, you know, how they can be assisted. And in terms of resources, is there a budget that is reinforced only for these kind of schools? Because they are not schools that can be able to be sustained with just an ordinary budget. It has to be a little bit higher, specifically the one of agriculture. Apparently it used to be a school that would, their product they would sell them internationally. They were at that level. And now they can hardly have, they don't even have one car or, you know, so it's a bit frustrating. And the other thing, with regards to your supplementary subject, when we get the results, because I wonder if sometimes we think that they are overlapping, because they are learners who just say, okay, I want to improve the subject. Not necessarily to say that they have failed, but they're just improving a subject. So how do we measure that to say, okay, because now we're like this learner has passed, and even have a bachelor, now we're coming back and say, okay, this learner again is here on this list, and you know, it's passed or didn't even perform well. How are we able to also measure the same when learners come back? Are they really their subjects, do they really improve, or maybe, you know, they stay the same or they perform worse than they have before? Thank you.
Sorry, David, can I just add on to that, if I may?
Thank you.
Minister, can I ask you and your department as well, whilst we're speaking about agricultural schools, a News 24 report spoke about a school in the Eastern Cape, the Arthur Mfebe Agricultural School. They are on the verge of closing. Their livestock is dying because the education department in Eastern Cape hasn't transferred their tranches. They delaying the school's 1.5 million budget allocation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Can I give Honourable Mguni that opportunity?
Thank you very much. I may have not been here for your presentation, but lucky enough, as a teacher, you prepare before you come to the meeting. So I have planned and prepared. That's why I have my own questions. You look at aviation authority, generally and internationally. When there has been a problem in an aircraft, they will investigate it thoroughly and find what the problem might have been. And this will be applied generally in all aviation authorities indeed throughout the world. And that's why we have got a less number of crashes. If we take that scenario, we put it in education, it can't be as usual, business usual, where we say every time we've got kids who are not coming to write, and they ever increase, they register, they don't come to write. And what is the department doing? Do you ever commissioned a research? Because you cannot generalize. You start generalizing, you lose everything. Did you ever think of commissioning a research using a what's called institution? Because I believe the institution have got the standards of doing what is best, and they will come with the product that will assist us in taking this report. Two, we have gone throughout the provinces now. Almost all the provinces. All my provinces. I think this one was my last one, Northwest. I never went to Northwest on education. I just went with you now. The experiences are the same. You may find that curriculum implementers are not there, or there's a lack of them. You find there are shortages in terms of textbooks and the like. But you find there are provinces with the same problems. All of them have the same problems, but they perform better. Northwest, if you're there, you can see that the schools are suffering. No, we are performing at 80. What might be the problem? These schools, is it the issue? Because we must look at, it may find that neither you are doing your work, but somebody there, in terms of leadership, is not doing right. And that might be the cause. You may find that, because it may find that, okay, maybe everything is fine. Maybe let's look at our system of education. Because there are many things that maybe look at. Then you come with an answer to say, no, man, this is the problem. Or it may be some schools have got better leadership, quality leadership, and others don't. Did we ever try to come and commission with that? And if not, so do we think of doing this research that may take us entirely to the system? And lastly, you said four questions. The issue of making our teachers accountable, is it working? This system of making our teachers, because, you know, there was time when you say, no, if a school underperforms, a principal will be fired. A new principal comes in, finding the same school leadership, finding the same teachers, finding the same parents. I won't count the learners because they go out, in and out. And then these people sabotage the principal who is strict and doing all the things. You fire the same principal. You don't look at the district manager who might be a cause who is hiring on behalf of the principal. They just bring the teachers unqualified, who just went off unqualified or qualified. So, the question that I'm just asking, do we have any way of holding teachers accountable?
Thank you very much, honorable members, for engaging with the presentation. Then I'll allow DBE to to respond. Maybe we'll start by the minister to deal with this. Honorable Minister.
Okay. I'll start by first and foremost, and can I show Mr. Mvuni that we are paid to interrogate our work. Education, the social enterprise, it uses its own tools to assess its work. Its work, unlike in a mechanical environment where you can easily trace processes, it's very mechanical. That's why they're comparing us with a different industry. We're a social enterprise, and we have tools that we're using. But what I'm saying, we're paid to just do that, especially at national level. It's what we engage with on an ongoing basis, so you can trust us. We use different tools of assessment. These, your ANAs, your teams, your pills, those are assessments which have to help us on an ongoing basis to interrogate the system. We go to SACMEC, we enter so many, and those are some of the tools that we use to assess our way. We use research ourselves, we have a whole branch of research to also understand where we see difficulties to understand them. We use reports, your statistician's reports, what do they tell us about our children. We use dialogues all the time, I'm in provinces, to engage with people on an ongoing basis to understand what is happening. The DG annually, beginning of the year, we speak to all principals and all key stakeholders. At the end of the year, after September, we're going to engage to also so we're using different I thought I should really assure the member that we are not sleeping on duty. We do what we possibly can. The other point I wanted to respond to, which for me, and I think for all of us as education, as for teachers, this question about gender and how we empower women, and but this is one subject we keep on looking at, but one of the responses was also have a gender is to just check on the girl child. Mm-hmm. That girls do very well in lower grades. Mm-hmm. And again, it's about socialization. They're socialized very early to be responsible. They watch this. So even when they go to school, that socialization helps them to hold themselves. But in higher grades, when gender roles come in, especially in Tuareg communities, you can see that it impacts on the girl child. They have to do washing, the food, they. So you can even see that it really begins to impact on their performance. So it could be gender roles, but one of the things, I mean, last 2 years back, we had this Miss Olympiad in the country. And out of 103 countries that sent teams to come, were here in Cape Town. There were only 3 girls from 103 countries. And every country brought 4 children, 5 competitors. We didn't even have more than only 3. Then I spoke, which was really worrying. When I spoke to the UCT professor saying, how do you explain this? And unfortunately, he was a man and said, you know, some stage maths means aggression, so this is about testosterone. It's a game here now. So it could be that boys can, when they grow up, they become more aggressive in terms of success. And those are the things that help us to say to the girls, children, to give them assurance, confidence. Because it could be just a psychological battle at some stage about being a woman and just really being soft on issues. And that's where sometimes, as I say, when on a program with girls, just to give them the confidence to say, it's not about the students, it's about making the psychological battle to succeed, to achieve. But you can see it in terms of your honors, your masters, people who stay on now are boys. Girls after masters, most of them, and again, it's gender roles. That they have to start building families, the husband comes back, reads the newspaper after eating, go to study, the woman has to prepare kids for. So again, it's all the gender roles that we have to understand. So I just thought it's a good area we have to look at. The other point which I really thought this discussion, which is an issue of huge interest to me also, it's just around the general performance of the system. And on an ongoing basis, as the sector, we try to understand where are the shortcomings, where are the weaknesses, where do we need to strengthen, all sorts of things. When I came in as minister, one of the key issues that we had to deal with was the language issue from your foundation phase to your intermediate phase, because children would have been expected to do the language of learning in grade 3, and they have choices in grade 4. And you agree it's not working, that's why your intermediate phase is a death trap, which it continues to be. The jump between, even if you look at our ANA results, between your foundation phase and your intermediate phase, the intermediate phase is really your phase, it's really your death trap. And it affects, and kids grow up with deficits, which when they go to senior phase, it really kills them. And that's why we're focusing now on making sure that we build foundations for them. So even like if you're going to intervene at FEC, you're not going to get anything if the foundations are weak. Even if language, if the foundations are weak, there's very little you can achieve when you get to the FEC phase. So there's great importance for the system to really look at foundations for learning. The other point, Chair, which I also want to share with members, I'm not sure if we did give you the report on schools that work. But it's exactly the same question that you're asking, Mr. Machin. Schools in the same area, same resources, same qualifications, but perform differently. So we did a sample of schools that really work, and we took township and rural schools to say, what makes these schools work? What makes Denron work? What makes this school work when others don't work? And we'll share the report, because I think it makes very interesting reading. It boils down to schools that work. So leadership, because all those schools that work have got very dynamic and great leadership. It's the culture of the school, the schools that are known. So it's the culture that people and parents go there with those expectations. It's the support for learners that also sometimes schools escape, just making sure that learners are confident, are well looked after, are protected, and all sorts of things. But the bottom line is the solution lies in the school, not outside the school. The schools that work don't work necessarily because they have great support from district or province. They work well because they're functional as schools. So which means the focus is to get schools to work themselves. But I think we can do that. Accounting in Western Cape, people also ignore the grinding effects of urban poverty. So as much as these provinces may not have your rural dynamics, like the food, and the debate we always have with MSS, to say Gauteng and Western Cape are faced by also major difficulties of urban poverty and overcrowding. It's also a factor. So yes, perhaps rurality is very expensive to run. The system in rural areas, distances are big and other things, but there are different dynamics. What makes Gauteng and Western Cape stand out? The leadership in those provinces, not their ability or their rural. I went to the Eastern Cape last week. Programs that we had agreed 10 years back have not been resolved. Mm-hmm. And how do you want to get those? You don't repeat, even though you don't repeat the same thing more than 30 times when the MC is not jumping and talking out. You should look at the leadership in those provinces, and the Free State in particular. Go and look at the district directors. They choose the best. Go and look managers here in Western Cape. They choose the best. And how there's a big competition to make district directors. Right? So it's the things that those three provinces do. And the results confirm nothing else. It confirms what leadership in those provinces do. So you can say whatever you say, they suffer. No, what I'm saying, and they do other problems to say, hey, we're rural or poor, but the things that you pick up in this province, the problems which are not supposed to be there. Right? We still find, you know, when Western Cape got into trouble with the merging of schools, it's a decision we had taken. That's why I was even accused by AFC Congress and sending us and don't vote for her in the next one, because she sided with the province. And I said to them, the decision we took as CEM, that we have to rationalize schools so that we can do the following, what they have jumped and did it. And they possibly bent their fingers, because when we went to court, we lost the cases. Yeah. But up to now, we were thinking, but we're talking the same story. We're thinking about merging. So for me, what works in those three provinces, what the leadership in those provinces do, and nothing more, nothing less. They are doing the right thing. They are on top. It's as if we've agreed with them. As a result, this other problem, we send them to the Free State to say, let's go and check how this support schools. Gauteng and Western Cape can be in competition, but they visit each other a lot to learn from each other. Right? So as I say, it's what those provinces do. The question about Gauteng has more people, KZN has more children. It's your urban migration issue. So parents in KZN either leave children at home, come and work in Gauteng. So there are more people in Gauteng in terms of other populations. KZN has more children as compared to Gauteng. So which means some of the kids, and even good boarding schools, good schools are in KZN. So there's just nothing not clear. It's just that Gauteng has more people, KZN has more children. So that's where the difference is. And most affluent parents send their kids to, they have the top schools. They send their kids to KZN, and those old boarding schools.
Mm.
They attract lots of even kids from affluent communities. Most of the top schools that are in KZN. But also, as I say, lots of working parents, young parents that leave their kids at home, but leave wives at home, come in working housing. They can go on and off all the migration patterns in KZN. They're very different from other provinces. KZN, as you see on a Friday, when cars go south, unlike in other provinces, it's a historical issue. People in the Free State and in Sotho used to go and work in mines as a practice, and leave, even in the Eastern Cape, and leave parents at home. KZN and men still have a hold on, they were working in circles, the security work. So that the culture of keeping the rural base intact and working in housing and just commuting all the time to. So it's just, as I say, the migration patterns and the settlement patterns here. My brother is right about the culling, and that's what I think about, which is giving us lots of challenges, about the culling of children in the intermediate stage. We can give statistics that will show you that after grade 10, we lose almost 30% of our learners. We always report this matter. And it's these poor foundations of learning, where kids, after your intermediate phase, they carry such huge deficits that when they get to the senior phase, they're struggling in terms of curriculum, and therefore get discouraged and drop. But that South Africa also, that's why we strengthen our learner well-being program, indicated as your juvenile delinquency, teenage pregnancy, and all social problems. Young people at that age, 16, 17, are very sensitive to poverty. They feel they don't have proper shoes, they need school. So, and that's why we have to strengthen our program, social development, around the safety net for learners to come from difficult environments. So there are lots of social problems that they're confronted, and they just don't cope because we don't have a strong psychosocial services in the system, especially at the point when young people need it. So your kids who drop out of sort of teenage pregnancy, youth delinquency, peer pressures, and all sorts of things, but also academic, that they are just not able to cope with academic because of the deficits that they bring in the lower phases. And that's why we have to strongly correct the intermediate phase, because that's where they pick up lots of deficits, which then come to create problems for them when they get to high school. Because that intermediate phase is very difficult. Some teachers who are not well qualified can't correct the curriculum of that intermediate phase. Because schools, say it's a primary school, they think they can send anything. Try and help your grade 6 child with the homework and think you can cope with that mess. Sometimes I have to ask people to say, I just don't know how they work this. Honestly. Had messed up to grade 12, but I just can't do some of the sums with the new curriculum, the new methodology. So we must be well trained to be able to cope with the intermediate phase, and I think we've ignored it quite greatly. The quality of passes is home, but I also don't want to be cynical, because every time I speak about education, people raise about quality of passes and say, in the ruling party, last time they were using the 30%, that's that half of the school leaving certificate, and that's the school leaving certificate that we used to call it. Now, because we give the percentage, they raise that. Yes, and how many of you got pensioners? Half of them didn't have, but yeah, they went to technical schools and other towards, you know, to not they need to call them like, not if you don't go to the technical schools or the technical society.
Amba.
No, not Amba. technical. And this generation, if you ask these things, you say, well, if you have a basis, not that you have 30%, I guess, every school you are talking about. So, but what I can say also, that's why we, every time we speak to people, we speak to them. Because we're monitoring our work in terms of whether we're making good. And that's what Dr. Poli kept on saying. That's what we monitor, where the needle is moving. If it's moving up, and my biggest fear is that it shouldn't go back. But you're quite right, and that's why we have round table to get professors, to get people to help us diagnose where the challenges are. We can report on a number of, and we use people who are outside to say, tell us where is the problem, what are the things that we have to do. Especially on medicine science, I think we've had more than 3 round tables this year with the university professors and get them to, even us to help us unblock, just to make sure that we improve the quality, because that's what for us is an indicator if we're going to do, we're doing well or not. And where we feel we're stagnated, that's where we really seek help and just see if we can get partnerships and get everybody to work. So that's what informs our... In terms of teacher shortages, again, it keeps on changing. And that's why, you know, allocation of funds and Ushaka is informed about what are our needs at a given time. At some stage, we had a huge problem about medicine science. Yes, indeed, your foreign teachers, especially from Zimbabwe, helped us to deal with the problem. But we have already produced, I think, adequate team of ourselves in the area. This year, when we're getting the reports on the absorption rates for the kids who have qualified, by May, we're at 57%, which means more than 33% of learners with medicine science, we couldn't absorb them in the system. All right. So we're desperately looking forward for them because we couldn't absorb them. Despite the fact that we're not renewing contracts of foreign teachers and all sorts of things. So our current problem now is around your 3 streams curriculum. That's where our current problem is. And also around your foundation phase and your intermediate phase. And again, that's where we're giving bursary. It's also around language, around Africans and African language speakers. And that's why we had a problem in PE, because we didn't have enough teachers who are African-speaking teachers who could who were qualified, because we're not perhaps giving enough African-speaking children bursaries for them to go and teach. So it shifts. So now the major problem around shortages is around language. It's around your foundation and your FET phase. Not FET, it's your foundation and intermediate phase, and that's why we're now at ECD. Because we don't want these things. If we say we're going to professionalize ECD, we can't work on it the way we're working on it. First we start with a crash, then they run an ECD. It can't be an ECD program. So those are the areas where we're meeting difficulties. And indeed, as you say, subjects like agriculture, which we're really not focusing on, because we're really pushing emphasis, and we're seeing that we... specialized schools, for instance, we got a fund for learners with profound disabilities. We don't have specialists to deal with special, and those are the areas where our focus now and our difficulties are. Teachers who can teach with sign language. Because how do you teach a child with sign language if you can't even sign yourself? Those are some of the key areas we're focusing on to make sure that we can improve our area. Agriculture, you're quite right, I visited a school in Limpopo. I mean, I've never had an agriculture teacher for 3 weeks. It's in the township, 3 years, they're in the township, they say they're teaching agriculture. I mean, honestly. And ask them, they say common sense tells you that you can't offer, there's no farm, there's nothing, right? So these specialized areas are very expensive to run, so you can't run them everywhere. So provinces have to plan and budget properly and have a specialist. For instance, it becomes unfortunate if you then have a school which was meant to be an agricultural school, has a farm, has its own stock, then it's allowed to run to win. But other schools, like you say, we're not even supposed to start teaching a subject called agriculture. This school in Kofa, had a teacher for 3 years, they said they're offering agriculture, but they're really offering death sentence to poor people's children, because there's no teacher, there's no farm, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, how did you come to the concert? No, we're a rural community. I said, this is a real world. Right? It's a real world. You don't just wake up and say, I'm rural, therefore I'm going to teach agriculture. So you're quite right, where provinces and schools do wrong decisions. So the other point I wanted to do is, I said, that we should reflect on what the Western Cape and the Free State do, and the results reflect what they put in. It's not accident that they're successful. It's what they put into the system and dealing with problems. How we deal with no-shows is because of emergency engagement also. When we learn us, we ask them, why did you pick up? Some of the problems against the provinces, a Free State, because it has very few failures, but their pass rate is almost at 90%. They are able to have proper 10 ups for supplemental because they are few. They phone them, encourage them, support them, because they are few. Mm-hmm. But other provinces with big failure, if you have 50%, you can't follow those 50% back. And therefore, you need a system, and that's what I said, because you need a system where you can have a second chance, have a program, give them facilities, give them support and time to prepare. So again, not just them, so it's something that we picked up through engagement. Metric improvements, we encourage them, because the kids will come to say, I wanted to do medicine, but they amount are 40%. And it take a whole year, then they get quite a number of them. They get full marks with the now focus on that they're much more mature. They know what they want to do. So we follow on account service because I don't know what is happening. They still have answers like what you're going to do. It's for a different empty time. We're dealing with imaging. We use different tools.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Dr. Fazio, and then are you still going to respond? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for covering us on most of the questions, and I think we'll just add in terms of some of the specific details with regard to what Minister has already responded to. I think just to clarify, Honorable Besson, the issue about girls performing worse than boys. Mm-hmm. I think we need to understand that as a system we've been focusing on access with regard to girls. And I think that we've got right. So we certainly have more girls in the system than boys. The issue of performance, in terms of the data that I presented, you still have more girls passing than boys. 233,000 girls compared to 188,000 boys. But the difference is when you look at it in terms of percentage. So in terms of every 10 boys and every 10 girls, you possibly have 6 girls out of 10 passing, but 7 out of 10 boys passing. So it's something we need to investigate further. And I think Minister has listed a whole host of reasons as to why girls tend to be better lower down, but when they get older. And obviously, it's an area for further research. Moving on to Honorable Mokoto, in terms of the quality of passes, I think Minister has added, but I also need to say is that for that particular reason, we're moving to what we're calling the inclusive basket of criteria. So we don't just focus on one factor, which is pass percentage, but we're looking at all the other quality indicators which you refer to in terms of bachelor passing, throughput rate, which Honorable Boshoff also alluded to, maths participation rate, performance in physical science, performance in maths. So all of this collectively is a better indicator of quality, and that's where we are moving to. And when we talk about this inclusive basket, the inclusive basket which we are still piloting and still making sure that it's reflective of performance. So we use at all levels of the system, from the national level to right up to the school level, so we can monitor quality at a very in-depth level, right down to the school level. The question about second chance program, and you mentioned the fact that our centers are very few. Remember, improve or increase. But also what I think maybe needs to be clarified, that the second chance program is not in the main a face-to-face program. There are various other modalities of, because remember, these are learners who've been in school and are scattered all over. And therefore, the online is one that we are focusing on. And a number of learners have access either on their cell phone or laptops. So online is what we are encouraging. And also the fact that we're putting some very good material online, which our learners who've not made it the first time through can utilize. In terms of positions in the supplementary, I think that we can, you know, scrutinize a little further. Overall, if one looks at the positions are still the same. But I think what you're saying is probe further and look at, you know, at subject level where the provinces are still putting the same kind of effort in terms of making sure that the supplementary is in sync, which we'll certainly do. Your question again, Honorable Mokoto, is whether no-shows and the merging would overcome the problem. Now, when we discussed the whole issue of merging supplementary with the June, and this was done based on the research that we've done, we've interviewed our higher education institutions like USAP, and basically we've come up to the conclusion that the time period does not allow them to prepare adequately. And therefore a learner was not prepared in November. When you get to February, and given the fact that he's only got 4 to 6 weeks to do any kind of preparation, it's not going to change his confidence level. And that certainly is the main factor. And obviously, with the merging of the exams, it will be observed to see whether we now have a better turnout rate compared to what we currently have in the case of these two separate opportunities. Honorable Kosa, in terms of the drop in accounting, that certainly is a concern. And therefore, we've put together a program which is referred to the NSLA, the National Strategy for Learner Attainment, where per subject, at the level of the district, at the level of the school, we look at performance in subjects specifically in terms of where there's underperformance. And there comes in special improvement plans to address that kind of underperformance. And you're right. I mean, those are subjects that are required by the economy. And we not only look at the school, but also even look at our exams. Is there a problem with our exams? Is there a problem with the curriculum? And so these are all the factors that are constantly under the radar to make sure that not any one of them is disadvantaging our learners and contributing to the poor performance. In terms of monitoring more closely, Honorable Matesi, the learners that seek to improve, now, most of the learners that write the supplementary are not learners who are possibly got a 30% and now want to improve to 40%. Because remember, the criteria are very specific. You must have failed. So it's mostly your failures that will come to write the supplementary. But the difference with the merging, Honorable Matesi, is that we're going to allow learners that want to improve. If you've got 30% in math, and you want to enter a faculty where they require 50% in that. With the merging, which is now going to take effect from 2019, will allow any learner who wants to improve to be able, and that's where we'll be able to monitor improvements more closely. Moving to the issue of Honorable Wurtz in terms of the numbers. And I have that slide on there, and I'm not sure whether I understood Honorable Burchard, unfortunately, left. But maybe just to clarify to the others, that the 93,000 that we talked, we refer to there, in that column, the fourth last column, is the number that enrolled, number that registered to write, but only 52 pitched. Mm-hmm. Now, if you compare that 93,000 to 124,000, it means fewer learners registered in 2018 compared to 2017. So the numbers, in fact, in our supplementary are dropping. And maybe that's also, Honorable Basson, a reason why it justifies the merging, because the numbers are depleted. So I quite didn't get the question, because you spoke about possible learners coming from previous years that are now swelling the numbers. But just to add that learners that fail an exam, let's say you fail the supplement, you can write the November, you can write the following November. So you come in as a part-time candidate and you can repeat the exam whenever you need to. I think the minister has responded to Honorable Boshoff in terms of the gatekeeping and to monitor gatekeeping. I mean, that's why the inclusive basket is so critical, because we're looking at throughput rate from the level of every school, their district, and where there are high dropout rates, I mean, those schools get monitored to make sure that no school is manipulated. And we are aware that there are some principals that are possibly manipulated in the system, and we are monitoring that very closely. In terms of the additional numbers you request, Honorable Boshoff, I think that will be provided to you in terms of number of learners in grade 10 and number of learners in grade 12. I think that will be provided. And I thought that in our 2017 analysis, we provided more data on inclusive education, but I think this year we'll make sure that we have a more detailed analysis. I think we've improved, and certainly we'll continue to improve in terms of the kind of data that we provide with regard to our learners with special needs. And then, Honorable Nguni, I think Minister responded to, you know, the aviation analogy. And I also use the other analogy, Minister, you know, it's not like a bakery. In a bakery, you know, you add ingredients A, B, and C, you're certainly going to get the loaf of bread. But in education, when you're dealing with a whole myriad of social economic factors, there's never a guarantee that input will guarantee a particular output. But I think the point that Minister made, which I want to reiterate, that no decision is made without us having the evidence that we require. Not that we do not require research in all cases. In some cases, the reports that we have provide us with the evidence, and particularly when we look at studies like TIMSS and PIRLS and even our systemic evaluation model, we're now looking at contextual practice and not just looking at learner performance per se, but looking at learner performance in the context of the whole host of other factors that impact. And all of those help us to understand as to exactly where the problem is. And we did present to honorable members our systemic evaluation model, which we're going to be piloting this year, which we're going to implement this year, which is going to be providing that kind of holistic data and evaluation on a continuous basis. I think I've covered, I'm not sure, Mr. Benerji, if you want
to... Thank you very much. I think Mr. Benerji is fine, and we're all fine. Honorable members, as I requested that we still have 10 minutes, we can deal with it. It's very few minutes that we can deal with. But then we can through the minister, and then we'll be left to be dealing with these issues. It's very critical that we should do so. Thank you very much.
To present a document on global education.
So because he needed to do thorough consultation on the document, the draft that he already had, he will only be available to do that presentation next week, not this week. So I was just highlighting to the members that the document will be submitted in due course. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Mkota. Let us start with the minutes of the 15th of May. Do we all have a set of minutes? Do we have those who do not have? We all have. Thank you very much. The 15th of May. We will do simultaneously correction and discussion. On page 1, two, three. No, the other one, there's nothing to. On page 1, you can't discuss names. I'm not just correcting you. Sorry. We're on page 3. Page 4. Thank you very much. Can we have someone to move for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Bassoni?
Chapter 10.
The recording?
And move for the adoption of this
minute. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Any second? Any radical objection? Thank you very much. The minutes of the 22nd of May, 2018. Page 1, 2. Page 3. honorable Basoni.
As I ever present.
Thank you very much. Any second that?
Yes, I can. That's cheaper.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukoto. And the minutes of the 5th of June. Short. Page 1. Page 2. And page 3. Any mover? Honorable Machesi?
I'm hoping for the
Thank you very much, Honorable Machesi. Any second that?
I second chair.
The 21st of August, page 1 and 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. And page 8. Honorable Bishop.
Thank you, Chair. I propose that we move to the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. Proposal is that to adopt the minutes. Any second that? Second that, Honorable Bishop. Thank you very much.
Lastly, we have a report of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education on an oversight visit to Mushabela and Kangala Education District in Mpumalanga Province. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. I don't know, Honorable Members. I thought that we did receive minutes. I don't know, Mr. Brown.
Yeah,
but
I think
we did. Yes, we did. But that does not mean that you cannot be afforded an opportunity to.
Mr. Brown is saying this document.
Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16. Page 17. Page 18. page 19, page 20, page 21, page 22, page 23, page 24, page 25, page 26, page 27, page 28, page 29, page 30, page 31, page 32, page 33, page 34, page 35, page 36, page 37, page 38, page 39, and page 14. Thank you very much. That was the last page of the report. Can anybody move for the adoption of this report? Honorable Basone.
I move for the adoption of the report.
Thank you very much.
And I would like to propose that you Mpumalanga people, you follow the challenges.
Mpumalanga people will do that as the chairperson of the committee today.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Second.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Any seconder for the proposals to adopt?
Chair, I would love to, but I wasn't there on the very first day, so I can't comment.
Okay, thank you very much. Any seconder? Yeah. Honorable Koto. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.